Okay, our subject for tonight has to do with finances or money. It's probably a subject that all of us could learn something about and from. It's also probably a subject that for whatever reason we're a little more private and secretive of. And I don't know that that is bad. Certainly what we give on the first day of the week I think is a private thing. And most of us consider our income to be something that we don't put on a billboard. But it does cause problems. What I would like to do tonight, if we have time, is to talk a little bit about our personal finances, and then talk a little bit about the church's finances. If we don't get to the latter one, we will save that for another occasion. David Myers, in his book entitled Wanting More in an Age of Plenty, quoted this anonymous quote. And I quote, "We spend more, but we have less. We buy more, but we enjoy it less. We have bigger houses and smaller families. More conveniences, but less time. More medicine, but less wellness. We read too little, talk too much, and pray too seldom. We've multiplied our possessions and reduced our values. These are the times of tall men and short character, steep profits and shallow relationships. These are the days of two incomes, but more divorce, of a fancier house, but a broken home. We've learned how to make a living, but not how to live. We've added years to our life, but not life to our years. We've cleaned up the air while polluting our souls." You might quiver with some of those thoughts, but I think in general he's summed up the country, the nation, the society we live in. But hopefully he did not sum up us. But I do believe anything the Lord gives us is a gift, and it deserves, requires stewardship. As Christians, we should learn how to be good stewards of our money and our resources. And it's been my experience, and it's probably been your experience, that nothing miraculous happens at baptism that causes one to become a good money manager. Because I see far, far too many children of God who appear to me not to be good money managers. I will go out of the state of Iowa for this particular illustration, and I'll make it vague enough that I don't think you would ever figure out who it is. But this spring I was counseling a couple in marriage, and money was a tremendous issue in their marriage. But what's amazing isn't that money was the tremendous issue, until I give you the background. This couple owns about 1,000 acres of farmland in Kansas, which, depending upon when you sell, is somewhere in the $4 to $5 million arena. They have a combined income of $195,000 a year, and they oftentimes don't have any money to put gas in their car. I don't understand that. And I've talked with them a long time. They don't understand it. But it goes somewhere. And I don't bring that up to make light of them. It's just amazing how poor money managers many people are. And therefore, it seems to me, poor stewards of what God has given them. We all tend to think we're pretty good money managers. Maybe 1 in 10 people I encounter thinks they'll admit they're not a good manager of money, but most people think they are. And 90% or 95% of you may be good money managers. If you are, then maybe we'll just be going over some things that maybe you can help somebody else with down the line. But studies show that debt and money issues is in the top two arenas of breaking down marriages and conflicts in the home. We just forget, however blessed we are, I guess, and we don't know how to make it. By being born in the United States, you live in the top 90%+ economically of everybody in the world. Most of you make in 1 week what many families in the world make in a year. Even if you're retired, you'll make more in a month or have more income in a month than many countries in the world. So it's an issue of perspective. To whom much has been given, much shall be required. Luke chapter 12, verse 48. So how do we deal with it? What I'm going to do is go through some scriptures that give us some insights into money. And then I'm going to spend a little bit of time in some very practical areas that maybe would help some of us or some of you. And some of you can add to this list and make comments probably with greater expertise than you will get from me, although I do find this to be a very interesting and a fascinating subject. Had I not chosen to do what I'm doing today, I probably would have chosen to be a financial advisor just because I find it fascinating. But maybe this has as much merit as that, so we'll do that. I want to begin by going back to Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and begin with verse 10 and look kind of in bullet fashion at some of the things that Solomon, a man who was not lacking for money, shares with us, of course, with the Holy Spirit. I'm going to begin reading in verse 10. I'll just read a few verses. We're going to ultimately kind of go to the end of the chapter, but I probably won't read all of those verses for the sake of time. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10. He that loves silver shall not be satisfied with silver. He that loves abundance with increase, this is vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them in their eyes? The sleep of the laboring man is sweet, whether he eat much, or little or much, but the abundance of the rich shall not suffer him or allow him to sleep. Five things in those initial verses that I think Solomon is sharing with us. They're not revolutionary, but they are important. Number one, the more you have, the more you're going to want. And they've done study after study. Everybody would like to have not twice what they have. Everybody would like to have about 25 to 30% more than they have. The problem is when you get 25, 30% more, you still are looking for the next 25 or 30% more. Luke chapter 12, I'm not going to turn to it, and verse 15 shares that same sentiment in the New Testament. Number two, the more you have, the more you will spend. Now I believe there are exceptions to that, but in general, when our income or whatever, our assets go up, so do our expenditures. But they tend to go up not because they are necessarily things we need, they tend to go up because they are things we want. That's not anything wrong with that. Eugene Peterson once said, the more you have, the more looters will show up. And I think we've seen that in stories of people that have won the lottery, or maybe if you've gotten an inheritance, maybe your circle of, quote, friends has increased. Number three, the more you have, the more you're going to worry. Assets, income, finances, wealth, the more you have, I believe probably the more you're going to worry. If you don't own any stocks, you don't get terribly upset when the stock market goes down. If you own stocks, you probably know what the stock market did today. Last I saw, it was about 350 down. I don't know where it ended up. But that's significant. That's 2.5% if I did that math real quick. It'll come back up, so don't go lay across the highway. But the point is, if you don't have any, I don't worry about the cost of farmland, because I don't own any. Some of you might watch that pretty closely. Well, that's just natural. The more we have, or whatever we have, we're going to cause some worry and cause some stress. And some of you remember, we all can remember reading about the Great Depression, people literally killing themselves because they had lost 50, 60, 70% of their wealth in one day, and I guess their value was caught up in that. But always remember, the more you have, the more you're going to lose. If you don't want to lose anything, don't have anything. Well, that's probably not a good motto, don't have anything. But the less you have, the less you're going to lose. And he talks about that, because you can't lose what you don't have. But also, the more you have, the more you're going to leave. because we're not going to take it with us, are we? It's not wrong to have things. It's not wrong to have income. It's not wrong to have assets. But it is wrong and it is foolish to put our hope in them. Corrie Ten Boom once said that she had learned to hold every possession she had loosely because when God pulled it away from her, it didn't hurt as much if she held it loosely. We know better, but I think even in the children of God, sometimes we put our or equate our value to what we have. Just a little more, Solomon. In verse 18, he says, "Behold that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all of his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him for his portion." Our ability to earn money is a gift from God. And the ability to earn money can be taken away from us just like that. Our minds can go vis-a-vis a stroke or an accident. Our physical capabilities, it can just go. We sing a little song. I didn't sing it tonight with the children. When I wake up, I'm thankful for a brand new day. When I get dressed, I'm thankful that I can play. When I come down to eat, I'm thankful for my food. But most of all, I'm thankful for a God who is so good. We could change those words just a little bit. When I get up each morning, I'm thankful for a brand new day. When I get dressed, I'm thankful that I can go to work. I'd have to figure out how to make it rhyme. But the sentiment would be most appropriate also for us. And Solomon also reminds us in verses 19 and 20 that not only our ability to earn, but our ability to enjoy is also a gift from God. And I think that's a good foundation for us to keep in mind. Jesus, not money, is the answer. I think you all believe that, but it doesn't hurt for us to remind ourselves of that. The second set of scriptures I want to look at is the Sermon on the Mount, but there's been a couple of articles recently that I thought were kind of clever. They called it the Sermon on the Mount. And since we're talking about finances, I guess that seemed a little bit appropriate to me to maybe just at least add that just a little bit. And I want to look particularly at Matthew chapter 6, beginning with verse 19. Really, it goes to the end of chapter 6. And again, I'm not going to take that whole segment and do an exegesis on it, but I do want us to glean some or remind ourselves of some thoughts out of that. Verse 19 and 20 are very famous verses. "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through and steal." And probably many of you have memorized those words at some time in your going to church. But let me make a couple of observations. I think an important thing for us to remember is the literal phraseology there is, "Do not treasure up treasures for yourself." He is not saying it's wrong to invest. He's not saying it's wrong to prosper. He's certainly not saying it's wrong to be rich. I think the problem is in the "for yourselves." If we can prosper, and many of you have prospered greatly, all of us, I think I can say, have prospered greatly compared to the world, we need to understand that the laying up of treasure is appropriate when we can do good with it, not simply to hoard it and to lay it up. In Luke chapter 12, verse 16 through 21, that's the incident of where the man has barns and he says, "Well, I've been so prosperous, I'm going to make bigger barns to hold them." Well, how many barns full do you need? How many safety deposit boxes do we need? How many bank accounts do we need? Well, it's a rhetorical question. I don't know the answer. That's up to you. But it's the concept of not laying it up for ourselves. I've probably shared this thought with you, but I've wondered often why God continues to bless me. And I don't think it's because of need, although, I have needs like you do, but I wonder if it's not somewhat to see what you and I are going to do with it. In verse 20 of Matthew 6, we see two elements of generosity and spiritual focus being brought to bear. And generosity and spiritual focus, I think, are two of the things probably at the top of the list for us in our money management and in our consideration. I was talking to somebody the other day about tithing. And we don't find tithing, the 10%, and actually in the Old Testament they tithed 23%, but we normally think of it as 10%. But we don't see that in the New Testament. But how much should we give? The Bible says, give as you have been prospered. What does that mean? Is that 1%? Is it a half a percent? Is it 20%? Well, I think probably those numbers move based upon our stages of life. The empty nest couple maybe can give a higher percentage than the family with 14 kids. And I don't know, but I wonder how many of us give as we have been prospered. And I don't want you to raise your hands, but do we give as we have been prospered? I asked this person what they thought. We were talking, and we, rightly or wrongly, probably concluded that probably less than 10% of us really give as we've been prospered. I can't prove that, so it's not an accusation. It may be a looking in the mirror. But there is this idea of being prospered so that we can be generous and have a spiritual focus. Campbell Morgan once said, "You are to remember with the passion burning within you that you are not a child of today, you are not of the earth, you are more than dust, you are a child of tomorrow, and you are the offspring of deity." It seems to me like that might affect our concepts a little bit. But as I move through this in Matthew 6, in verse 21, he begins to talk to us about our priorities. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Verse 22, a singleness of vision. This is back to focus. He's talking about people who have treasures, but their focus is on spiritual things, not on worldly things. And then, of course, he gets to the no man, you can't serve both God and mammon, and we both know that. Boy, that took you a long time to notice that. Good grief. And those were so good. Thank you. That was a boo-boo. Okay. Thank you. Am I up? Yeah, I'm where I'm supposed to be. Well, you guys are patient. Or you just don't have very high expectations. Maybe that's closer. Thank you. I thought Lowell was going to make a comment, and I didn't believe that. Okay. A single... You want to go back and see those other slides? No, you don't. You don't. One man wrote, "Our hearts have room for only one all-embracing devotion, and you can only cleave to one Lord," which is what the Scripture is telling us there. Thank you, Lord. Now I'm going to take a little time before I was going to do this at the end, but I know what happens. I never get to it. The next few bullets are not in the Bible. They're just practical thoughts I had about how, as Christians, maybe we could handle our finances better, and I'm going to open it up in a little bit to let you add to this list. This is really profound, but it's probably the number one problem almost everybody has who has financial problems. Spend less than you have coming in. Please. One of the greatest compliments that some of you know, Chad Freeman, he was an elder for a long time at Gregory. One of the greatest, and I don't know that he meant it this way, one of the greatest compliments Donna and I felt he ever gave us was about 30 years ago, and he looked at us and he said, "You guys are living below your means." He was right. But we were doing that on purpose. And I was lucky enough to have a wife that would would share that venture, if you will. I always like the saying, work for your money and then let your money work for you. Not to be rich, but to be good stewards. Dave Ramsey would be out of business if everybody did that. And Dave Ramsey does a lot of people good. He's a, I'll say, a quote Christian financial advisor on the radio. I don't agree with everything Dave Ramsey says, but for some people, he's right on. And we'll talk a little bit about maybe the one area where I think he's especially right on. Maybe this is more for the younger ones, because those of you that are older, it's too late, but it's really never too late. If you work someplace that has a 401k, and if you don't know what a 401k is, ask somebody. It's a wonderful way to get 50% return on your money the first year. Because many companies will put in 3, 4, 6, some of them put in 9%, and they will match that with half that. So if you put in 6%, they'll match it with 3%. So by putting in 6% of your salary, you instantly have 9%. That's a 50% return. If you do that and don't touch it, when you get to be 60, you'll be able to serve the Lord without having to worry about a lot of the things that the world has to worry about. These others are simply other forms of this. This is something that everybody can participate in. IRA, there's variations, KEOs, ESOPs, if you're self-employed. And this is not meant to be a financial lecture. It's just to, if you're not familiar with these, they're wonderful. And you don't have to pay taxes on some of these until you're old. And that's kind of nice. A Roth, I almost feel bad putting these things up there, but it's amazing how many people are just don't have any idea what they are. This is a wonderful one where you put money in, it's after-tax money, but you don't have to pay taxes on the interest or the accumulation or the dividends. It's absolutely, I wish they'd have had that when I was 20, but they didn't. I put this one up there because sometimes in the church, people ask, should a Christian own stocks? And the difficulty that sometimes it genders up is they can go up and down, so it's a gamble. And so owning stocks, is that gambling? I don't know how many of you own stocks. I don't care how many of you own stocks. I don't view it as gambling if you do own stocks. You're simply investing in a company. Companies can go up and down, but it's no more of a gamble than starting your own business or working in your own business. Some people don't have the temperament for that kind of financial investment. But over the long term, they've consistently been the way to go. Absolutely been the way to go. I'm not trying to make you rich. I'm trying to make you good stewards of what you got. Because financial comfortability, I think, has very little to do with what you make. Has an awful lot to do with what you make. Hopefully I'm not getting too nosy. Real estate, I could let Keith talk about this one, but he probably wouldn't. But well, he might, so I better not. No, I'm just kidding. Some people love that. That's a good investment. That's not for me. Because if that real estate has a building on it, then you got to fix it. And that's where I'm out of the picture. But some of you, that's a good way for you to do it. But do watch your debt. This is one area where Dave Ramsey and I might part just a little bit. He's a big advocate of not taking on debt. And that's good to an extent. Because you're not going to get in real trouble if you don't ever take on debt. The problem I have with it is, if you're a decent money manager at our interest rates, you can earn more than the interest on your debt. So that never quite made sense to me. But if you have any tendencies toward poor stewardship, go ahead and pay your mortgage. Probably a good idea. And, well, stop there. Let the Joneses go. Because you never catch them. Once you catch one Jones, there's another Jones. And there's another Jones. And we've all heard that phrase, keeping up with the Joneses. There is not a correlation between financial success and spiritual success. there may be a correlation between financial success and spiritual disaster in some cases, because it really can turn people's heads. But it needn't. Many of the men and women of the Bible that were very, very devoted to the Lord were wealthy men and women. And I think maybe what we're seeing is that when God finds a person who can handle this aspect of His blessings, He's found a real jewel, because they can probably handle other aspects. Does anybody have a comment on any of these, or things you would add to the list that you have found that might be helpful to somebody else, or things you have tried that were disasters? Lowell?
I remember talking to Vern about his taking a risk when he was farming. He had expenses, and he wasn't gambling, he was taking a risk. And that's the way I feel about stocks.
What is the difference between gambling and taking a risk? I believe there is a difference. What is it? Or what are they? Maybe there's more than one. Marvin? You said gambling, you're sure to lose. Well, somebody wins. Maybe sooner or later. Yeah. It seems to me like one of the great differences is in gambling, somebody has to lose in order for me to win. When I take a risk in some of these things, somebody doesn't necessarily have to lose. I may just go up with the tide, so to speak. If the economy does well, someone doesn't have to necessarily lose. And that seems to me to be, in my mind, a difference. I'm not trying to get you to do things you're not comfortable with. I know many of you have done these and many others. I just think it's part of being good stewards of what God's given us. And some of you will come into huge sums of money in a big lump. It's called inheritances. And there's a real responsibility with that. Marla?
One bullet you could add is, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Okay, I guess as a financial person we'd say diversify, I guess would be the term. Yeah. Anybody else? Whoa, the financial experts are coming out of the walls.
I just wanted to, one of the tips that has been most helpful to us as far as if you have a mortgage is we set up a separate checking account that is only for a mortgage, and so then we have auto deposit. However many paychecks you have in a month, figure out what portion of those paychecks needs to go into that mortgage account. So then at the end of the month when you need to pay your mortgage, the money is there and it's set aside and separate for that purpose.
Okay. Sounds like a disciplined approach. If it works for you and you and your husband are comfortable with that, I applaud it. We had another hand. Mike?
I just wanted to add to that. One thing that we're doing, not that it's the greatest thing, but we were told that you should spend, if you can, you should make, possibly if you can, make two payments a month, and your mortgage will get paid off. Probably save about 5 to 10 years on your mortgage. Another thing.
And that's fine. That's exactly the right thing for some people to do, and not always the right thing for everybody to do. But paying off your debt is usually not going to get you in terrible trouble, even if you lose a little money. Bruce?
What about the master that gave, was it 10, 5, and 1?
Yes.
And the 1 buried it?
Yes.
Can you comment on that just a little bit?
Okay.
That seems counterproductive to me.
Yeah, the parable of the talents, the 10, 5, 2, or 1, and or the 5, 2, and 1. I think the problem was not that the one who had one talent didn't prosper any, it's that he didn't try. I think if that man had gone out and tried with that to have increased, used his talents, and it didn't work out, I think probably it would have been okay, but he buried it. So it seems to me like if God blesses us and within reason we can prosper that and grow it, then we've got more to give to the church, we've got more to give to people in need, and move it around. If we're just doing it so that our zeros keep mounting up and the commas keep mounting up as a scorecard, then I think that's laying up treasures for ourselves, not laying up treasures as God would have us to do. That does not mean it would be wrong to have some funds for an emergency or for family. I think we all hopefully do some of that. But many times financial resources become a scorecard, and the more zeros you have at the end of your net worth, the more valuable you are as a person. That's the way our country keeps score, is money. And I think that parable that Bruce is alluding to is taking, I don't think that's just a financial parable, it's a talents parable, it's a resource parable, taking what the Lord gives us and using it to the best of our ability to serve Him. Do you have a different angle, or you'd like to, maybe I did not hit what you were thinking. Okay, I can relate to that. He does, but he lost it.
But it okay, came back. It's just money is just a tool.
It should be.
And some can use it well, and some can't use it well, just like other tools.
Yeah, I may be wrong. I think some people don't use it well. I'm not convinced they can't, but they don't. And maybe it's the matter of just how we're raised and what we're taught. Those that grew up in the Depression tend to be a little more like the one talent man. They're going to hide it. Not hide it, but they're not going to do a whole lot with it. But I didn't grow up under the Depression, so I can't relate to that. Did we have any other hands? We've got Alan up here, and then I'm going to move on.
Your first bullet point was to spend less than you bring in. I'm persuaded we're plagued with credit cards that enable us to spend more than what we make. I believe it's a good thing to cut them up and get rid of them. I know some people will say, well, I have to have a credit card for certain things. It sounds like Dave Ramsey here. I am a fan of him and do feel as though that it is important to judge what is best for you, but getting rid of those credit cards will keep you from getting into debt that is unnecessary. And you can use a debit card for a lot of those transactions that a credit card is required for.
I think there's some validity to that. I see it a little bit different, but I don't disagree with you, and let me explain. A debit card makes you pay for it right as you buy it, so you're not going to be able to buy something you don't have money to pay for it. That's good. But I think if we used our credit cards right, we'd have money set aside in our checking account to pay it when it comes in. If everybody used credit cards like some of us use credit cards, they'd have to change the way they do credit cards because they're banking on that 18 to 24% interest when you don't pay off your... And it is amazing, ladies and gentlemen, and maybe someone here is in this pickle. I've visited with a lot of people that would have $75,000, $80,000 of credit card balance that they just keep rolling over. Well, you do the math, and that's a big hole. Because you're paying $1,000 a month or so in interest, and I'm sure some of you have seen people. You can spend money you don't have so easily. Teenagers get credit; they get things in the mail to get a credit card, and I don't understand that. But you're right. Anybody else? Margaret, and then we'll move.
I like one of the things I've heard about. When you're being good stewards of God's money, of your money, that you are, I'm doing it too now. Might as well forget.
You want us to come back to you?
Yeah.
Okay. When we get to church finances, and I wanted to spend a little, and this could be a whole session, church finances seem to me to fall under our responsibility to give. I'm not going to say much about that tonight. But it is interesting when you go to the widow that put in the mites, Jesus was standing there watching what people put in. And it occurred to me, how would you like it if the deacons Instead of passing the plate, we all came up and put our offering on the table and the deacons all watched what we put in. I doubt we'd like that. I'm not advocating it, but I find it interesting that that's exactly what Jesus did. He was watching, and then he complimented her. She put in more than any others. How did he know that? He was watching what people put in. I came back to you.
Debt, we are slave to another master.
You can be.
Yeah, most times with credit cards and stuff like that, it ends up happening where you spend more of your time and money trying to pay your bills than you do trying to help other Christians. And so that's just one thing that I've always been keeping in my mind, that I should not be spending more stuff I don't need to, because I'm not being a good steward when I do that.
Greg is a blessed man. Yeah. Let me comment a little bit on church spending. What should the church spend its money on? That's what I'm getting at. Well, when we praise and glorify God, sometimes finances are needed to do that. But more specifically, I think the church should spend its money on things that build up the body. That could be Bibles, it could be classroom capabilities, it could be various things that build up the spiritual body, things that help us. Spending money for spreading the word. I think we would all hopefully agree with that. Benevolence, hospitality, that's clearly found in the Bible. And if we're going to have a building, we need to have it at least looking as if we care about it. Not an ostentatious building, but we ought to keep it up so that it reflects our attitude toward God. Whoops. But the point I wanted to make is not all good causes are in the church's domain. I believe there are many things that are appropriate for me and you as individuals to participate in that aren't the church's arena. If I want to give to the American Heart Association or the American Cancer Society or whatever charitable thing that might be appropriate, I think that's fine. I don't consider that to be the church's responsibility. If I want to pay someone so they can bowl, I think that's fine. I'm not sure the church is in the bowling business. Now, I'm expressing opinion here a little bit, but if we're not careful, and I haven't seen this, certainly in this group or even in the entire Des Moines area, churches can get themselves sideways by getting into areas that I don't think are the church's domain. The church is a spiritual organization and not a temporal or physical organization. Let me talk a little bit about misdirected benevolence. Are there some times when a benevolence is inappropriate? I think the answer is definitely yes, and I think Jesus gives us a support for that. And the passage I would turn us to is Mark chapter 14, verse 7. And Jesus, and he was the most generous, most benevolent of all, but in Mark chapter 14, verse 7, he says, This was when, I'll just read verse 7. You have the poor with you always, and whensoever you will, you may do them good, but me you shall not have always. Now, the context here is someone had just done something rather elaborate for him, and the disciples wondered if that was a good use of the funds. And he says, well, I'm not going to be here always, but notice what he says. He says, and whensoever you will, or whenever you desire, or however you prefer, you can do good to the poor. I think that concept of whenever you will is from the Greek word thelo, and it means whenever you choose or prefer. I think he's telling us that we're going to have to make some judgments in benevolence, because we can't help everybody. We have to make judgments in that. So I don't think we should feel guilty if there's occasions where we're not able to, and I think there are occasions when it is unwise to give people money. And when our benevolence becomes enabling, I think that we begin to get ourselves into a real problem. And I don't mean to step on anybody's toes, because I don't know where your toes are. But parents, I would strongly urge you, do not enable your children by bailing them out, whether they're 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 years old. You're not doing them a favor. Now, you conduct your families the way you want, and you will. I'm just telling you the way I think the Bible teaches it, and I think it is wise. I know people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who have never financially grown up because they keep getting bailed out after bailed out after bailed out, and I have a little passion about that, because I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good in the church when we just bail people out and there's not a learning process. When there is a need, absolutely, and I hope all of us would empty our wallets when there is a legitimate need. But there is a huge difference between need and enabling. And while I started to say, while you're going to allow me to give my opinion, you're not allowing me, you're tolerating it probably, because I haven't asked for your permission. But I think those of us that are getting older, we want to leave something for our children. I think that's appropriate. I think that has its place. But I do wonder if it isn't also appropriate for us to leave a significant part of whatever we've got to the Lord's work. To the Lord's work. Everything I got, He gave me. It might have come through your hands, but He gave me. Why not give it back to Him rather than ruin my children? And I don't know that it would ruin my children. But if I live to be 80, my boys will be 50, and if they haven't learned how to handle money by the time they're 50, me giving them some more isn't going to help, but it's probably going to hurt. So, you don't have to agree with that, but I feel good for having said it, whether you agree with me or not. Anybody want to make a comment or ask a question before I bring the kids back up? It's a delicate area, and anytime we talk about finances, I am glad we have deacons or whoever that counts the collection, because I don't want to count it. Because I don't want to know what anybody gives for fear it might cause me to think one way or the other. And I shouldn't. But I don't want to know. I just don't want to know. But somebody has to know, so God bless those who do and have discretion. We've got Shanya up here. Thank you.
My one wonder about saving up a bunch of money is, how does that teach us to trust God? I think it's very easy to trust in our riches and think, well, that's going to help me. You know, I have to have $500,000. I have to have $300,000. I have to have $1 million. I don't know, whatever people think they need. So that when I retire, I can do what I want and I can travel. Or, you know, I wonder if we wouldn't be smarter to try to find good causes to spend on now. We're not promised tomorrow. We're not promised 30 more years. And I agree with you about ruining our kids. I would much rather see my parents spend money on good causes than leave it to me. That's just a thought I wonder about.
And that's my opinion. That's your opinion. It doesn't have to be anybody else's opinion. On the idea of, does asset accumulation indicate lack of faith? There are people who feel it's wrong for a Christian to buy insurance because that displays a lack of faith. I'm not in that camp. To me, that's good stewardship. If you got life insurance, take care of your family if you die or whatever. But you could take it to the extreme. And one thing that assets do is they tempt us to think we've got everything pretty well under control and we don't need God. And I think that's why during prosperous times, people drift away from God. During adversity times, they come to God. Because in prosperity, we tend to think we don't need Him. I don't think that has to be the case, but that's human nature. That is that tends to be, the Israelites did it, but we do it too. We do it too, probably. Anybody else? Lowell?
Student debt. I know of instances where, you know, medical field, I know of an example where someone's $307,000 in student debt. They'll probably not have a terrible time getting rid of it. But there's people that have a terrible amount of student debt and they're unemployed or they don't have a job when they get out too. What's your feeling then about, I remember when families could put their kids through school, the cost of higher education isn't that same proportion of our income as it used to be.
So your question is?
Well, I don't think families have to, they owe their kids everything, but I think the kids need to help, but I hate to see us have money and couples getting out of college, getting married, and have such terrible debt that it hurts their marriage.
Well, any time money hurts a marriage, it's unfortunate. But, you know, there are legitimate reasons for debt. I mean, most of us wouldn't have a home if we hadn't borrowed. Maybe somebody here would have, but we wouldn't have, and not too many people would. That's a legitimate use of it. Some people can't go to college unless they borrow. That may be a good investment. You're investing in yourselves. But I think a little bit of common sense so that you keep that under control so it's manageable. And I don't know what that number is. But you can go to college cheaply if you want to. Not as cheap as it used to be, but you can go cheaper. But sometimes it's worth to spend a little bit more money, I guess, to go somewhere. This is a tough time for graduates getting out of college because the job market's not what it was when I got out of college. And some of you probably had 5 offers when you got out of high school or college. I don't know. That's not the case anymore in many cases. So, and going to college is not a ticket to financial security. A lot of people that don't go to college make more money than people who do go to college. It's just what your preference is. But if we're going to take it out, you know, then we're assuming an obligation to try to pay it back. I mean, that's part of the deal. And a lot of student loans probably don't get paid back, but a lot of other things don't get paid back either. So we're a live for today and don't worry about tomorrow. Now, there's some merit to that, but we're not good stewards as a nation. Let us be good stewards as Christians.